official report. Federal investigators say they no longer think the man who plowed a truck into a crowd in New Orleans, killing 14 people, had accomplices. FBI Deputy Assistant Director Christopher Reyes says the Army veteran posted 5 videos as he drove from Houston to New Orleans.
He stated he had joined ISIS before this summer. He also provided a will and testament.
CBS's Jason Allen is at the attacker's Houston home, which is being searched.
FBI investigators came in pretty forcefully searching that trailer for any signs of planning for this attack, any signs that maybe some of the devices that were found in New Orleans had been put together here. They also had searched a Jeep that was on the property.
New Orleans Bourbon Street has reopened. CBS's Katie Weiss is there.
You know, Bourbon Street is known for being party central, and slowly but surely the crowds are gathering here again. People are coming out to have a good time, just like before.
CBS News Special Report. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Community Stories is taking a holiday break for the month of January. I'm your host, Melissa Kay, and the show will be back in February with more stories from your community.
The Packers lose their top defensive back. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Cornerback Jaire Alexander suffered a knee injury back in October against the Jaguars. Packers head coach Matt LaFleur asked if there were any updates.
Yeah, I would expect Ja, most likely he's going to be done for the rest of the year.
Is that injury related?
Yes.
So you have the surgery?
Yes.
Alexander had his right knee scoped on Tuesday. A report says he could be back by mid-February if the Packers are in the Super Bowl. I asked safety Xavier McKinney what it's been like watching Jaire struggling to come back.
Yeah, it's been tough. You know, he's dealt with, you know, this injury pretty much all year. Obviously, we wanted him to be back out there, but, you know, injuries are part of the game, so we understand that. We know that he's been working, you know, or he was working to, you know, try to get back, but it's like every time he was trying to, he would tweak it again, so it's a part of the game.
NBA, the Bucks in action tonight in Milwaukee. They host the Brooklyn Nets. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Hi, everyone. Seth here from Seth Faces the Music. You know, being the host of the award-winning second greatest radio show in the state of Wisconsin can be a lot of work. I have to come up with new themes all the time. So in the interest of clarity, here are some topics I will not be using in upcoming episodes.
Mittens, tinfoil, gastric bypass surgery, window treatments, 17th century Japanese art, outhouses, bowler hats, spam, clog dancing.
Seth Faces the Music, every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. only on WFHR.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. I'm preparing myself for the new year, getting ready for the chaos, getting ready for the truther in chief, the Twitter idiot, and the midnight 3 a.m. tweeting or truthing or posting or whatever. Evidently, Trump is fixated on Canada becoming the 51st state. In fact, was up early in the wee hours claiming that many Canadians want Canada to become the 51st state. He says they would save massively on taxes and military protection. Protection from whom? Us, right? He says, I think it's a great idea. 51st state! Exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point. And you go, many Canadians? I've never met one. I know none. No one's ever said, gee, we really wish we didn't have health care. Gee, we really wish we didn't have, you know, stronger union protection. Gee, we really don't like the social safety net that ensures that if we get sick, that we have to go bankrupt, divorce our spouse so we can get some help so that because we're then indigent. Gee, sign me up for that. I've never heard one Canadian. In fact, I did reach out to a Canadian friend and say, hey, what do you think? And he just sent me a smiley emoji. like, yeah, no. But, you know, it's good in the deluded mind to have a goal. Also, we're only, again, the very best people hasn't been put out there. Trump is not saying this time around he's going to choose the very best people. I think he's going to choose the very most loyal, which is why, interesting, on Tuesday this week, you had Trump announce that Herschel Walker, the football player who has a lot of interesting baggage, that he is now going to be a candidate for ambassador to the Bahamas. And my first thought was, how do I get that gig? You know, you just sit on the beach all day? Because I didn't even know we really had an ambassador to the Bahamas. And then my thought went, well, yeah, it makes sense that you would have a guy who can barely read or... that's not true. He was valedictorian, wasn't he, of his graduating class in college or something? Oh, no, that was just the story. Never mind. But yeah, he's going to be going to the Bahamas and being there. He's going to represent us. And, you know, at a time when you're starting to look at the fact that Trump is just throwing a bunch of stuff out there so that we'll chase it and focus on the story instead of the fact that he's doing some really ugly, evil stuff to our media. As he said, you know, in one of his press conferences, we've got to straighten out the press. He said, you know, our press is very corrupt, almost as corrupt as our elections, which, interestingly enough, some of the polling that's been going on right now, maybe he can sue this polling too. It actually says that, you know, the red hats think elections are free and fair now. Our elections are perfect now because they won. And this is what happens when you have crybaby losers and poor sports who vote for a particular party. You don't hear a lot of Democrats, you know, running around whining that they lost. You hear them going, how do we fix what went wrong? What did we do wrong? How did we not connect when the message that we should have been telling is how we were making lives better, how we were investing in infrastructure and reshoring manufacturing and strengthening work protections and all of the things that built the most prosperous working class in humanity? How did we not get that message out and lost to a guy who wants to destroy all of that? And it's because, again, I come back to the power of right-wing media, the power of the echo chamber telling the red hats it's all bad until we'll tell you it's all good. Because understand, January 20th, we are going to have the greatest economy that history has ever seen. That's going to be the message. All of the sycophants and all of the loyalists will be saying, you know, Trump came in and everything changed. You know, car insurance went down and rents went down and all this. The suffering's still going to happen. We're just not going to hear those voices anymore. We're not going to hear from those people because they're going to be the ones who are going to suffer more. So for me, the interesting part in all of this is going to watch that transformation. And we will be here to point it out as it happens. Because remember, January 20th, eggs are a buck a dozen. Gas, a buck a gallon. It's coming, telling you. Or so they say. Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So not surprising, on Monday, Donald Trump said that he had planned, his plan is to fire all the federal workers who don't return to work. Understand, a lot of the federal agencies set up work from home during the pandemic, actually working really well from what people are telling me. Workers are happier, more efficient. It's actually costing the government a little bit less. There's a lot of positives, but it's about power and control. This is about actually dismantling what works so they can privatize, profitize, and of course, you know, make the Elon Musks of the world more money. But he said on Monday from Mag-a-Lago that if people don't come back to work, come back into the office, they're going to be dismissed. They're going to be fired. They're out the door. I'm here to share some thoughts on, well, what that could look like, what that might mean. I've asked Travis Ruther to come talk with us. He's a policy analyst with the American Federation of Government Employees, AFGE.org, their website. Travis, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, thank you, Rick. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate all the work that you do with the show. And look, you sort of covered it, but, you know, this is a very concerning time for federal workers. You know, our members are up against some serious threats. Donald Trump, of course. You've got your right-wing billionaires, your Elon Musks, and your wealthy corporations all talking a big game about getting rid of federal jobs. You know, you touched on the telework stuff. As you mentioned, you know, our members are very happy with that arrangement. It's increased productivity. It's allowed agencies to recruit and retain talent much better than they have been able to in the past. We are anticipating significant attacks on our contracts, on our telework, on our collective bargaining, and our union representation rights. Like you said, we've got these things in our contracts, and we faced serious threats before. So we're going to do everything we can to fight back live to fight another day and come out stronger on the other side.
You know, but the concern for me is, and I'm sure the concern for you as well, is that this is an administration has shown that rules, that the rule of law, that precedent, that stare decisis for our Supreme Court, none of that stuff seems to matter. They don't believe that the rules apply to them and there are any guardrails or restraints that they'll honor. So, you know, I'm sure this will be long litigated, all of that stuff. But I do expect them to do a lot of this stuff right out of the gate. Is that your anticipation as well?
Yeah, look, we've been studying these plans. You know, of course, they put them all down on paper with Project 2025 and everything. So we've had months, if not longer, to look over and get prepared for this stuff. There are certainly... I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not going to speak exactly to the legal strategy behind any of this. But there will be sort of a period of delays and challenges or a period where things aren't exactly clear what's happening as they sort of work through this stuff. I think we're certainly dealing with uncertainty there. But one of the major things I think for our members that I want to emphasize is that they're not scared. You know, they're brave. They're ready. They're prepared. In many cases, they faced similar threats before, whether it was during the first Trump administration or in previous administrations in general. So. Our members aren't scared. They're organizing. They're mobilizing, and they're ready to do what they need to do to protect their contracts.
Unfortunately, your members, the federal employees, seem to be the whipping boys for Republicans or anti-government types. And this isn't new. You're right, but I think it's gone to another level, especially when you got someone like Doge Boy, who believes he can run government the way he ran Twitter, and that is just not slicing to the bone, but slicing through the bone. And which then means we as citizens are going to get less from our government, which is the perfect outcome for many of my Republican friends who don't believe government should, can, or will do anything right. It just feeds that narrative. So for me, there's a lot that people need to be paying attention to in this moment, in this position right now, with Trump saying we're just going to fire everybody who doesn't come back, even though the contracts are very clear. That's something people need to be paying attention to, because that's the work of an authoritarian. That's not the work of a president.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, you know, AFGE, I do want to emphasize that, you know, AFGE has been growing in recent years. You know, our members have been coming together. We've been, winning new contracts, organizing new units. I think in 2023, you know, AFGE grew by 5.5%, which was, actually one of the fastest rates of any major union in the country. And, you know, those sort of victories, that momentum, that's a big part of why, you know, I think federal workers, you know, sort of find themselves as the whipping boy, like you said, for your Trumps and your Elon Musks. You know, nothing upsets these guys more than seeing, you know, a strong union, seeing workers coming together and standing up for themselves.
Well, because to be honest, the only thing, and I say this about business as well, the only thing that restrains absolute power and absolute greed are strong labor unions, workers coming together, collectively demanding better wages, hours, conditions, opportunities, services, all of that stuff. So destroying the unions in every authoritarian regime in history, that has been the number one goal. So for me, when I see Trump making this part of his pre-administration discussion, this is sending the signal that it's not just you at AFGE, it's not just federal workers, it's everyone down the line eventually, because we're all in that shark tank.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, I think, as you sort of alluded to, you know, the proposals that we're seeing from DOGE, from Project 2025, you know, they're not going to make government more efficient. You know, what they're going to do is make government smaller, weaker, less effective, you know, and it's not going to be Trump. It's not going to be Musk who are sort of dealing with those consequences. You know, it'll be working people, you know, whether that's our members, whether that's federal workers themselves, or whether it's, the millions of other union members, working people across the country who depend on these government services, who depend on a functioning government, you know, for things like their Social Security, their Medicare, their if they are a veteran and get their healthcare through the VA, or you know, whether it's just sort of everyday things like law enforcement, public transportation, schools, housing, you know, the list goes on. And you know all Americans depend on these things. Working Americans depend on these things, especially. So like you said, I think it's gonna, you know, fall on the labor movement broadly, and working people across the board, if these policies are enacted.
As I've been saying, Travis, you know, the solutions will come out of the suffering from their savagery. There's no amount of suffering that they're not willing to impose on working people, in my view. And maybe we need this as a country, this collective understanding what our government does. When the phone doesn't get answered at the Social Security Administration, or there aren't any services available at the VA or other places, you know, maybe then there's a shaking awake of maybe this isn't such a great idea to run our government like a business, especially like a Elon Musk run business, which is to the bone. So for me, I wish we didn't have to go through this, but there's a part of me that goes, maybe there's some positive that could come out of this night, what could be a nightmare.
Yeah, look, I think, when you talk about, sort of running the government like a business, you know, in a lot of cases, you know, that's exactly what they want to do. They want to, take the VA, for example, and they want to privatize every last little bit of it that they can. And, you know, When you start to privatize and contract out these critical services that the federal government provides, you know what tends to happen is things actually get more expensive for the American public, while at the same time, you know, service gets worse because you know if you're running it like a business, you know, you're trying to cut corners, you're trying to maximize profit. That's your sort of your main goal. Your main goal is not service to the American people.
Yeah, so your main goal is feeding the profit monster. And, you know, the greed monster knows no ends. There's no bottom to their insatiable appetite for more. And I've asked this question for 20 years on this program. You know, name me something that we used to do for ourselves as part of the commons that we privatized and profitized that actually lived up to the sales pitch, whether it's our parking authorities, whether it's our prisons, whether it's our turnpikes, you know, whether it's our, you know, go down the list of the things that we, water supply, sewer, all of that, that they promised, hey, you're going to get better, more efficient, cheaper service, just hand it over to the people who really know what they're doing. And they do know what they're doing. They're making more profit and screwing over we, the working people. And I keep going, when do we wake up from this? But I fear we're on the precipice of another mass privatization scheme, especially as you start talking about the post office, you're talking about the VA, you're talking about all these things that we used to do for ourselves that they want corporate America to now to get their greedy hands on. I don't see positives coming out of it. But again, maybe there's an awakening. I don't know. Your thoughts?
You know, I will say, I think, you know, at AFGE, we're not opposed to government efficiency. You know, government efficiency is great. The government should work for the people. There are places in the government where there is waste, and we absolutely should be tackling that.
Yeah, the House of Representatives, the Senate, the executive branch. I mean, there's when Herschel Walker is going to be your ambassador to the Bahamas, there's some waste, fraud, and abuse that I could get rid of real quick. But here's the thing, and this is a divide and conquer tactic that the wealth class has always used. One of the divide conquerors is they got a job that they don't have to work at. They're lazy. They're less than you. So hey, we should get rid of them instead of going, hey, maybe how do we get health care and pensions and better pay and better working conditions? It's been masterful to watch, but dangerous for working people who have now looked at government employees who still have something of retirement security, something of health security. And I think a part of that is that jealousy because corporate America has screwed over the vast majority of working people so that it's easy to do. That's why I think we're in this mess.
Yeah, look, I mean, federal workers, you know, they have those things. They have that retirement security and those strong contracts precisely because they spent years fighting for them and spent years mobilizing and winning those things. I think to go back to your point about places in the government where there are where there is waste, you know, we've got federal workers in total. It's about $200 billion that you get total compensation among all of them every year. If you look at contractors, federal contractors, the number is $750 billion. You know, so my point is, you know, there are places where there is waste and you know, maybe something can be done there. But you know, of course, you don't hear much about that stuff from Doge, from Trump, because what they're really more concerned with trying to take money out of workers' pockets about that control. And if it comes for us, it'll come for other workers later.
Well, I mean, since you brought that up, the contractor part of it, you know, isn't Doge Boy one of the largest, greediest contractors out there? I mean, most of his money came from federal grants and federal contracts. I mean, if you want to talk about a government welfare queen, we got or especially an African-American welfare queen, there's one.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. I mean, this is a guy, he's the richest man in the world, literally. I think he's got more than $400 billion, to his net worth. Tesla, SpaceX, Twitter. You know, he's a notorious union buster. He wants to get rid of the NLRA. I think he's said in the past, you know, government unions must be destroyed. You know, where does it end? Again, like you said, he's a federal contractor himself. SpaceX gets a pretty penny every year from the federal government. That's what he wants to do. He wants to privatize that, take a larger slice of the pie for himself. And whatever conflicts he has there as a contractor, that's not what he talks about. He talks about controlling the workers.
Absolutely. So I want to go back a minute because you mentioned Project 2025, and we had talked about it all during the campaign, and every one of my Red Hat fans reached out to me and said, but that's not Donald Trump's plan. Donald Trump's not going to do, that's not, his name's not on it. It's not his. He's not going to do Project 2025 because even we hate Project 2025. Question. Seems like it's his plan. Seems like he's embraced it now.
Yeah, I think, that was just a lot of, a little two-step in the campaign where he was able to, sort of disavow, quote unquote, Project 2025, despite the fact that, hundreds of his former staffers, his former allies were involved at Heritage Foundation, or the America First Policy Institute, you know, drafting it, putting all those plans on paper. And you don't only see it there, but you also see it, you know, anytime Trump gets in front of a microphone, he talks about draining the swamp or getting rid of the deep state. You see it with the folks that he's tapping for various roles in his administration. For example, Russell Vought, he'll be the head of the Office of Management and Budget. You know, he's talked a big game about putting federal workers, quote unquote, in trauma. These things are not just words to them, but they've been clear from the get-go that these are their plans, and that's exactly what they intend to do.
Yeah, last question I've got for you. You know, looking at the new year, clearly, you know, January 20th is going to be an interesting day because that's going to be the day of the dictator, I'm told. And supposedly he's only going to be a dictator on that day. I find that difficult to believe. But on that day, what are you guys looking out for? What should our viewers, our listeners, what should we be paying attention to, especially on the government workforce side, as this administration takes power? What are you throwing out there?
Sure. I think one of the first things that we'll see will be Schedule F, which is actually something that Trump tried to put in at the end of his previous administration.
What is Logic F?
Sure. Schedule F, basically it's a new way to classify federal workers such that it would be much easier to fire them. You know, under Schedule F, agency heads can essentially point to just about any federal worker if they want and say that their job is policy related. So therefore, they can strip that worker of their civil service protections. They can strip their job of its merit hiring principles, so that they can fire people more easily,
just at will,
and at will, and replace them with a loyalist. We're expecting them to reclassify tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of federal workers as Schedule F, putting their jobs at risk. When that happens, when that order comes through, you know, we think you'll see a lot of the sort of basic, objective, nonpartisan government functions, government services that we take for granted, like food inspection or storm forecasting. You know, we'll see those things sort of become politicized in a way that is really very bad for the American people. It will really just open the door to even more corruption and favoritism than we already have.
Now, let me ask you about this, because, you know, I had labeled that as making patronage great again, because it's basically what it's going to do. The loyalists are going to get these jobs. If they're sufficiently loyal, if they haven't said anything mean on social media, but also have some bit of an understanding of what the job is so that they can functionally cripple it and destroy it. So for me, it's more than just about putting, you know, some Yahoo in there who doesn't know what they're doing. These are people who are motivated to destroy from the inside what our government does. Is that your sense, or am I just being a little conspiratorial?
No, I think that's right. You can see why that approach would appeal to someone like Donald Trump or Elon Musk, where, you know, that control, that power, the party loyalty is really the most important thing for them. And they've got folks, who they may have been in this position during the first Trump administration, or they might be, someone who worked on the Trump campaign or somebody in the Trump Musk Mar-a-Lago orbit, that they can put in there to really just politicize things and open up the door again to that corruption, that favoritism.
Or a bunch of people that, you know, what Project 2025 actually also did was vetted a lot of people for these positions. So they were already screening people for these positions with the intent of, on day one, we're going to go do everything you just said, fire everybody, replace with good loyalists who've been properly vetted, and make sure that they're sufficiently loyal to not only dear leader, but to destroying the mission of what they're doing. So that, again, you could continue with this government bad, private good narrative. Look, and they've been honest about it. We just didn't, I guess we as voters didn't pay enough of attention. But is this what you're expecting as well?
It is. I mean, look, when you strip away those sort of civil service protections and those merit hiring principles, you know, what what you sort of do is throw us back to, you know, the spoil system, the 1800s, you know, you remember from history class, you know, where again, you had all these, these key roles going to just loyalists. Needless to say, the spoil system, that was a disaster for the American people, top to bottom. It led to unqualified and politically motivated people doing, you know, sort of that objective work of the federal government. Again, you can see why that appeals to Donald Trump, Elon Musk. But look, AFGE does not want to go back to those days. Yeah. Federal workers don't, and neither do the American people.
There you go. You know, kind of like, to make your point, kind of like, you know, Herschel Walker as ambassador to the Bahamas. Yeah, there's a lot of quality. There's a lot of laying on beaches. I guess that's his qualification. But Travis, I appreciate you taking some time for us. I know in the new year we will be talking a lot. Have a good holiday and get ready for the fight in 2025. Thanks so much.
You too. Thanks for having me on.
Travis Schruther, policy analyst there with the American Federation of Government Employees. Are you paying attention? Are you ready for what's coming? Because again, as I said, it's going. This will trickle down. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy tonight, maybe a few flurries, lows in the low teens. Then a clearing sky with some sunshine for tomorrow, highs in the mid-teens. And staying in the mid to upper teens as we look through the weekend and early next week, staying partly sunny and dry. Currently it's 17 degrees.
The excitement.
Oh, he stones Bronczynski with a glove save!
The energy.
What's he gonna do? He shoots and he scores!
The tradition.
You've got to understand history if you're ever gonna write your own.
It's everything.
He scores! Badgers answer right back!
This is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger hockey.
Sponsored by Johnson & Sons Chrysler Jeep, Econ Electric, and 8th Street Auto. Listen on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, streaming live and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I've had a bunch of people send me this Josh Hawley clip. Because evidently there are some who are believing that Josh Hawley has had a complete change of heart. That during this holiday season, for workers, his heart has grown three sizes. And look, I'll be the first to say, if this is true, if it's genuine, if he really believes and has really had this change of heart, I embrace it. If Teamsters President Sean O'Brien has been able to turn Josh Hawley's heart toward working people, I will give him all the credit in the world. But I'm got to be honest, little skeptical, just a little. But here's the thing, and this is the important part, and this is why I'm glad so many people have reached out and said, hey, Rick, what do you think of what Josh Hawley did during a recent Senate subcommittee hearing? The U.S. Senate, the Judiciary Committee, held a subcommittee meeting on competition policy, antitrust, and consumer rights. The hearing was titled Continuing a Bipartisan Path Forward for Antitrust Enforcement and Reform. And look, things that I am 100% on board with. So just to be very clear, if this really is a true moment of bipartisanship, where the Josh Hawleys of the world are going, you know what? Corporate America has gone just a bit too far. In fact, a lot too far. If this is Josh Hawley going, you know what? The pendulum has swung. Then I'm going to give him credit for that. And I'll be the first one to say, maybe I was wrong. But I've seen his voting record. His name isn't on the PRO Act. I've seen what he's done. But here's what he had to say. And this is, again, this is one of those moments where I'm going to take him at his word for right now because I think his words are right. I think what he is saying is incredibly important for every working person, every politician, every lawmaker, every policymaker, every CEO to actually hear, because this isn't new, but it is interesting that it's Josh Hawley who has laid this out so, well, so very articulately. Here, take a listen to Josh Hawley's couple of minutes during this subcommittee hearing. Here's Josh Hawley.
Ask you just a question or two about Amazon. You're aware of Amazon's use of independent contractors, I bet. Is that fair to say?
Yes, that's fair.
Amazon calls their delivery service partner program, they call their independent contractors their delivery service partner program, or DSPs. Does that sound, are you familiar with this, broadly speaking?
Yes.
So these, as I understand it, this delivery service program employs about 300,000 people. And according to Amazon, none of these 300,000 people, their delivery service partner, so-called, actually work for Amazon, which is convenient because in reality, Amazon exercises enormous control over these delivery service partners. They control their contracts. They control every aspect of their business. They tell their these partners, these independent contractors, which vendors to use, which routes to follow, you name it. They even monitor the performance of individual drivers. And in some cases, they, Amazon, unilaterally fire the driver. So my question is, does that really sound like, and your understanding of the law, does that really sound like a classic independent contractor? If the company is, the parent company is exercising that degree of control over the vendors, over the individual drivers, does that sound like a truly independent relationship to you?
Well, not being a labor law expert, I'll give you my antitrust opinion. That Good. Does not sound like a traditional relationship.
No. Yeah, it doesn't sound like it to me either, but it does sound convenient for Amazon in a couple of respects. I mean, first, it means that if these are all independent contractors, legally speaking, they don't work for Amazon, then that means that they can't organize for work and working conditions and better wages. Is that right?
I think that's right.
Yeah. So it's a great setup for Amazon. It's less clear to me why it's such a great setup for their non-employees, but the folks who aren't technically Amazon employees, but yet just happen to work every single waking hour just about for the company. Does anybody else want to weigh in on this, Ms. Cooley? Do you have any views?
I'm similarly not a labor lawyer, but yes, I can see why that would be concerning.
Don't you think that it also gives Amazon an advantage over other companies like UPS? I mean, UPS employs their drivers. They have to be responsive to their drivers. They have to negotiate with them. By treating them as so-called independent contractors, Amazon doesn't have to do any of that for any of their drivers, right? I mean,
so certainly having vertical integration can have anti-competitive effects.
What a nice word, vertical integration. And look, you know, the people that you heard there, Professor John Newman, professor of law at University of Miami. He's an expert on antitrust and competition law. And Gwendolyn Cooley, who you heard there at the end, former chair of the National Association of Attorneys Generals, the multi-state anti-task force. This is somebody who, you know, understands antitrust law, understands this stuff. It's interesting to see how he moved them. Now, here's the thing. This is, and look, he laid it out as I have done a million times. These DSPs, these delivery service providers, are nothing more than a third party that shields Amazon from their employees being able to fight for better wages, hours, conditions. Exercise any control over their employment at Amazon. And Amazon has all the control. Now, well, the weird thing is I listened to Josh Hawley talk about this, and thank goodness that he is, but this isn't new. You know, FedEx has been doing this for years. A lot of other companies have been getting away with this for decades. This isn't a new practice. It's now you just have a $1 trillion company who has basically mastered it. And we're heading towards an era where everybody's going to be their own boss, so to speak, which means that they get to shoulder all of the responsibility and get none of the reward. So I'm thrilled to see Josh Hawley, you know, talking about this. And the hope is that, you know, some of the rumors that I've heard are true, that they're working on something of a pro act to ensure that there's no more of this kind of abuse. Now, I believe he was against the ABC test, which is how they judge how a person is determined to be an independent contractor. You know, do you have your own autonomy? Do you set your own schedules? Do you have the ability to take your own time off? Is this something that is outside of the scope of the core business? Or are you replacing core employees with exploitable independent contractors? It's a very simple test. And the reality is they fail on basically all of this. And you heard Josh Hawley walk through that. There are 300,000 people who should be employees of Amazon and who aren't. And there's a huge reason why. First and foremost, you know, you heard Hawley say it. Those 300,000 workers, they can't unionize. They can't fight for better wages, hours, conditions. They can't come together and strike. They can't do any of that stuff. No collective bargaining for those folks. But it's more than that. It's hiding the injury data because, well, they got hurt. It's not our problem. That's on them. And what we know about Amazon is their warehouse workers are injured at a much higher rate than any other warehouse, any other warehouse company in the industry. They're way outside there. So the fact that, again, you're not going to have any data collection because, hey, those people, that's their problem. And, you know, the power and control. It's really a corporate CEO's wet dream to be able to have no responsibility for anything having to do with your workforce. Everything's disposable. Everything's at your will, at your want. And you can ask and demand for anything and not be accountable or answerable to anyone. And for me, this is the part where you go, I'm thrilled that Josh Hawley did this. And look, the Teamsters, you know, put this out on all their social media because they've got to be thrilled that maybe someone in the Republican Party is going to be on their side to allow workers to organize, allow workers to join the Teamsters union, so to speak. Perhaps, you know, maybe even to get the kind of wages and conditions and all that the UPS Teamsters are getting, which are far superior to anything these Amazon workers are getting. And we've heard, these Amazon DSP workers are getting. Because what we've heard, and you know, I've heard numerous people say that, you know, the reality is the wages are poor. They're on a clock. They got to keep going. And a lot of times they're using restrooms in bottles. They're doing other things in bags. That's constant move, constant go, constant monitoring, constant everything. And yet, no law to protect them. Now, here's the thing, and this is where my praise of Josh Hawley kind of comes to an end. Because again, this isn't new. This is something that I've been talking about for nearly all 20 years of doing this show. I know what his voting record is, and his voting record is not in line with his commentary. And I have to assume, based on what we saw for the last several years, that if a bill today were to come up to end this practice, I'm going to guess he's going to vote against it. It's great to get the couple of minutes of grandstanding. It's great to have this social media push of, hey, look, I've had this change of heart. But the proof's in the pudding, man. What's your name on? What bill have you sponsored to do something about this? Because understand, he's one of the top 100 most powerful people in the U.S. Senate. He could do something outside of just beating up a couple of people in a subcommittee hearing. He could actually make the lives of 300,000 families that much better. We will see. Look, I'm saying right now, if he does, puts his name on something, on a PRO Act, puts his name on something that allows those workers to become actual workers and have the ability to unionize, I will eat my words and I will say Josh Hawley is a good dude. I'll lay that out there. Questioning it. For instance, Josh Hawley now is talking about, for the big tax buildup of 2025, he has come out with the idea of increasing the child tax credit from a maximum of $2,000 to $5,000 per kid, including pregnancy. They're saying that such a plan could cost somewhere between $2 trillion and $3 trillion over 10 years. And I'm of the mindset where you go, are you the Family Values Party? Are you the ones who believe that we want to have people have children? How about helping them have those children and afford them? This is the kind of bill that I said, once Roe went down, this is what should have popped up. Now, do I believe that this is something he's wholeheartedly behind? I don't know what's in the man's heart, but I've seen his voting record, and it's not great. So this is another one of those moments. Because of the holiday season, has his heart grown three sizes? I can only hope. But again, I go back to, I've seen the voting record. I'm skeptical. But on the other hand, and this is where I'm going to leave hope, stranger things have happened. And maybe this is the moment the Republican Party actually becomes a real party of the working class and not just a paper copy, not just the propaganda part of the party of the working class. But for me, it's not just the words, it's the actions. And what actions will we see out of Republicans this next year? Will we continue to feed the Elon Musks at the expense of our children? Or will we actually start caring about those children? Again, if history has told us anything, the lesson is be very, very skeptical of these folks. Want to hear your thoughts. You buying any of this? Do you think he's had this grand epiphany? Do you think the three ghosts came and visited him here before the holiday season? Is this genuine? I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. But take a quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1945. That was the day that workers ended their 99-day strike against the Ford Motor Company in Windsor, Ontario. Just across the river from Detroit, workers from the UAW Local 200 fought and won a union shop and dues checkoff. They had to fight hard to get it. The plant was organized during World War II. Workers put off many demands to help with the war effort. After the war, Ford refused to agree to a new contract and laid off 1,500 workers. The workers voiced their rage and issued new demands. They wanted vacation and layoff pay, better grievance procedures, and medical benefits. They also wanted compensation for work on Sundays and holidays. When Ford refused to budge, 14,000 workers took to the picket line and went on strike. By October, they also shut down the powerhouse that brought light, heat, and power to the plant. Management complained machinery would be damaged if the power remained off. The Ontario Provincial Police and the Royal Canadian Mounted Police were called in to reopen the plant. When they arrived, they found a barricade of some 2,000 cars and trucks reinforcing the picket lines. Then, 8,000 workers from Amalgamated Local 195, which included Chrysler workers, walked out in sympathy. They joined the picket lines and stayed out for a month. The Women's Auxiliary organized to feed the strikers. They had financial support from unions, churches, and small businesses from from across the country. Returning soldiers marched in solidarity rallies along with much of the community. Because of this strong showing of support, negotiations were jump-started and soon workers were ratifying a new contract. This victory allowed what is now Unifor 584 to win unprecedented gains for its members for more than three decades.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So if you think we're divided now, just wait. Corporate America's got a new app out. I'm going to help homebuyers find out the politics of potential neighbors. Yeah, The Guardian has reported that there's this app going to help you find out who the potential neighbors voted for or what their political affiliation. So look, I got to tell you, I love the fact that my neighbors don't agree with me and that we have discussions sometimes. I love the fact that that we're different. I think it would be rather boring in a very homogenous world. Also, Marjorie Trainwreck Greene, she's back in the news, offering a new solution to deal with the drones over New Jersey. She's going to want to shoot them down. She said, quote, "I'll shoot the drones down myself, along with every other red-blooded, freedom-loving American." Yeah, wait till they bring a plane down. You know, wait till they start shooting at small planes and because of the hysteria. You know, well, the weird thing is I guess maybe I'm old enough to remember a time when we weren't afraid of everything and that we had a news media that maybe was a little more judicious in what they threw out. Yeah, there are people who are flying drones around. I see them too. There are people who have purchased stuff for Christmas that they're flying around. And look, New Jersey? Come on. I want to bang through a couple of emails quick. Tina sent me an email. As everyone knows, my wife has had an accident back in September, has been in the hospital ever since. And yesterday on the program, I showed what was her medical bills and the EOBs that come with it. It is quite an impressive bit of paperwork. And Tina writes, "Wow, that's a mountain of bills. It's an outrage. And I believe in what I've heard before, that the United States doesn't have a healthcare system. We have a wealth care system, and people still die, even with the ACA. And it's true. Look, when you have a company like United Health Group who deny 32% of the claims, and they're going to be the next iteration of Medicare potentially as we finally privatize it off, people are going to die in the process. There's no question about that, Tina. And what's odd is people are so frustrated and fed up, and I don't buy all of the polls that say, you know, all the 80% of Americans love their health care. No, I'm not buying that. Because virtually everybody I talk to face-to-face, they're ready for something to change. They've been trained like Pavlovian dogs to when they hear Obamacare, they start to foam. And they want that destroyed. Affordable Care Act, that's actually not bad. But I've run into so many people who are like, you know, we need a change. We need to change stuff. And I don't disagree entirely. I'm just not ready to tear everything apart just yet. But thank you, Tina. You're spot on. Wayne sent me an email, said my dad had a 10th grade education in the 1950s and 60s. He was a milkman, gas station attendant, machinist, drove a fuel oil and furniture truck, never earned more than $7,000 a year. And yet, he and my mom, my stay-at-home mom, owned two modest homes. He says, I worked my way through the University of Connecticut on minimum wage jobs, 100% summers. Thanksgiving, Christmas, spring break, freshman year in 1959 was $750 a year. Now it's over $42,000. He said, I was a Vietnam era Navy officer and pilot, a career FBI agent and Watergate investigator. My wife and I put two kids through college. What's wrong now, Rick? And the reality is, Wayne, I think you know what's wrong, like everyone else does. Our tax code is horribly rigged to enrich the very wealthy at the expense of everyone else. The reason that college costs were so much lower is because taxpayers funded it. The reason that you had health care that was more affordable is because you had community hospitals. We invested in our infrastructure. We invested in the future. We invested in technology up to the maximum point. And yet somehow along the way, we've gone, we need to be more business friendly. We need more CEOs to run things. And what do CEOs think about? The next quarter. These are not long-term thinkers. These are short-term self-gratification, instant gratification thinkers. So when you're talking about public policy, when you're talking about how do we have a system that invests not just for today, but for the future, short-term greed thinking is not going to get us anywhere positive. So for me, there's a lot of things that I would do, and I've talked about this extensively, Wayne, over the years. We need an Eisenhower-esque tax code, and we need it immediately. You want to pay our debt off? You start taxing the people who have benefited the most from the massive redistribution of wealth that has happened over these last 40 years. And you begin to invest in infrastructure, education, and manufacturing policy. The way you recreate that 1950s era, because my grandparents, when they got married, they were homeless. They were living in their car. And my grandfather, through a union job, was able to, they came back from World War II and, got a union job, got a home, eventually bought a couple of homes, lived their life with dignity. And my grandmother stayed home until the kids were into high school. And then she began a career. They did it through hard work, through dignity, but more importantly, this idea that if you work hard, play by the rules, that you should actually get ahead. And that was part of what was in us. Now it's, those of us who lived through the 80s, it's hooray for me and, the heck with everybody else. So Wayne, the era that you talk about, the most prosperous time in the history of humanity for working people, it'd be great to recreate some of that. And I thought Joe Biden was moving us in that direction, ending neoliberalism, reshoring manufacturing, investing in infrastructure and education, and strengthening unions. Kind of the secret sauce of that era, where someone pushing a broom could make a living, or someone delivering fuel oil could support a family and send them to college and take vacations and do all that stuff. This isn't new. This isn't a new speech. This is how it used to be. And that birthright, and I think the reason that the anger in this country is so powerful and so encompassing is because people thought that that was going to be their birthright. The belief that if you work hard, play by the rules, that you do get ahead. That if you go to work, you punch a clock 40 hours a week, it should pay you enough to be able to have, the necessities. The roof over your head, the food on the table, clothing on the kids' backs, but also some of the nice stuff. To be able to put some nice things under the tree at Christmas time, to be able to take vacations in the summer, to go see different things, to have different opportunities, to send your kids to college, to provide better opportunities. We had that. And it was taken. It was taken by policymakers to feed a greed class whose insatiable appetite for more never ends. We have someone in this country who's worth almost $500 billion. And he is running around saying we need to cut programs that help the poor, like Medicaid. I'm not allowed to swear on air, but what in the fill in that blank? What are we doing? That's the question. And you have to ask yourself, when was this country great? And is Donald Trump's policies, what he's talking about, is that going to get us there? I don't think so. But we're going to see. We're going to live through it. I had tons more emails to get to, but out of time. As always, I appreciate everyone tuning in. If you've got questions, comments, thoughts, something on your mind, something made you angry, something made you think, I want to hear about it. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. Freespeech.org if you want to check out the video. And as always, appreciate you being here. I hope everyone has a wonderful, amazing holiday filled with family and friends and happiness and cheer. I wish you the best. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@thericksmithshow.com.
This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM. W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. After yesterday's truck attack on Bourbon Street that left at least 14 people dead and dozens wounded, the FBI announces...
We do not assess at this point that anyone else involved in this attack is involved in this attack except for Shamsuddin Jabbar.
FBI Deputy Assistant Director Christopher Rea also says bomb techs recovered two improvised explosive devices in coolers in the Bourbon Street area. CBS's Tony DeCopel reports.
The FBI calling the attack here premeditated and evil. And while the investigation continues, authorities say they are now confident that the attacker acted alone. They also say new evidence, including video posted to social media, shows that Army veteran Shamsuddin Jabbar was, quote, 100% inspired by ISIS.
It's the cyber attack that exploded in front of the Trump Hotel in Las Vegas yesterday, was rented in Denver and driven by Matthew Livens.